In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about moving from Windows to Mac OS X. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 185. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. It's a word this week, sir.
I got an email from Elias Bays from Charity Sky, and he's running an Indiegogo campaign to convert his company from an LLC into a 501c3 registered charity. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because primarily our audience is kind of focused on developers, and this company, Charity Sky, is trying to focus on providing software development training to K through 12 students. So if you're interested in supporting that effort, head over to their website. It's www.charitysky.org. If you're interested in helping fund that cause, there's some information there. It links over to their Indiegogo campaign.
Very cool. Well, I just got back from Denver. I was at Copy Bloggers Authority Conference, and I had a nice dinner with several local micropreneurs there. And then the conference was Thursday, Friday. And the highlights for me were Seth Godin. He's definitely a good speaker, and you know, he's motivational, inspirational. And then Joanna Weeb of Copy Hackers. And she delivered a really, really good talk. We may ask her to do it at a future microconf because it was just good. It was a lot of stuff about split testing buttons, but not just a bunch of examples. It was like mindset of how to get inside the head of someone and how to structure button split tests. So it was really well done, and those are my two favorite ones. To be honest, the rest of the conference was so-so. Like, I wasn't really wrapped up in it. I've been a fan of Copy Blogger and Brian Clark for years, but it wasn't a great fit for me, and neither was the audience. I was kind of going out on a limb, you know, going to a place where I didn't know anybody, and there were just a lot of freelance copywriters and some copywriters for Fortune 500 companies, and there were some info marketers and that kind of stuff, but it wasn't necessarily an audience that I really need to connect with. You know, aside from those two highlights, I didn't take a ton away from the conference. So to be honest, the best part were the long conversations. You know, Joanna Weeb was there, Lance Jones, and Ruben Gomez, and actually decided on a completely new pricing structure for Drip, some headline ideas, how to describe what Drip is becoming. I mean, that was really the value, but it's funny, we could have just kind of hung out for a weekend and you've probably gotten the same value out of it.
Well, that's cool. But I mean, at the same time, you knew going into it that you were kind of going out on a limb, and it was outside of the industry and the types of people that you typically hang out with. So, you know, it was a risk one way or the other.
Absolutely. And for people, you know, for copywriters or for the info marketers or people who are more in that space, I think it was a really good conference. And I think there were some talks that probably resonated with them more than with me.
Cool. Well, speaking of conferences, tickets for MicroConf Europe are going to be going on sale shortly. So if you're interested in that, head over to microconfeurope.com to get on the early bird mailing list, and you can be notified when those tickets are made available. And tickets aren't expected to hit the public market. So, you know, if you're thinking of going, you should definitely be on the mailing list. But that said, if you signed up for the mailing list last year, you're all set. You're already on there, and we'll be sending out those emails within the next couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, and the speaker lineup is shaping up so far. It's you and I. We have Dave Collins, who's spoken at several microconfs and has always been a fan favorite. And then we have Rachel Andrew from Perch. And she does a lot of speaking. I've seen a few of her videos of a few of her talks. She's top notch. So very excited. Perch is a CMS that they sell, and the design element to it is really high quality. So excited to have her speaking to our audience. I got to be honest, man, the last 2 weeks have been really crappy. I got hit by the tax man this year. I had a pretty big tax bill, and then I had a couple other things come through unexpectedly, big expenses. So it's just hard to see, you know, cash that you're stockpiling go poof. But I feel like I'm kind of recovering from that and trying to get my bearings and adjust my business, frankly, because I don't have as large a stockpile that I had that I was going to be using to fund the growth of Drip and Hittail. So I'm having to adjust a few of my approaches.
That's demoralizing. When tax time rolls around, you know that it's coming, but I think the issue is that you don't necessarily know at any given point how bad it's going to be until it's too late. And it's like, you can't really mentally prepare yourself.
Yep.
So, and it can take a little while to get over, and then you have to plan around it and move some things around, and hopefully it doesn't hurt too bad, but you know, it's rough.
Yeah. I think demoralizing is probably the best way to summarize it. So today we're going to be talking about moving from Windows to Mac. And you and I have both done this in the past couple of years. I did it just over a year ago.
I started using a MacBook Pro back in 2005 or so. And this was back when I was doing some consulting work for Dell. And Dell was actually very upset with me because I refused to trade in my MacBook Pro unless they were able to give me a comparable Dell machine, and they couldn't do it.
Oh, nice. So have you used a Mac since then?
Well, I used it for a couple of years, and then I went off of it because at the time they were having a lot of driver issues, and it would just overheat, like to the point that I literally could not even touch the machine.
Right.
So I kind of abandoned it for a little while, and then I went over to a MacBook Air about the time that my back was really giving me a lot of trouble. Been on Apple hardware ever since.
Right. For me, it was the switch was when Windows 8 came out, because I looked at Windows 8 and I thought, you know, there's going to be a decent learning curve there. If I'm ever going to make the switch, it's probably best to do it now. And I was already being drawn in by the amazing hardware and the gestures and, you know, the other stuff we'll talk about today, kind of the pluses of moving over to OS X and to the Mac hardware. What I found is that the more people I'm talking to these days, a lot of developers and kind of the early adopter tech crowd are either already on Macs or they're moving there. And there's quite a bit to think about when you're evaluating this decision. And I didn't find any great resources on it. So now that I'm kind of a year past it, I have a bunch of software that I had to buy. I have a bunch of stuff that I replaced with free tools. I know what the benefits and drawbacks are, at least from my usage of it. And it's probably comparable to yours if you're listening to this. So that's really why we're talking through it, is just, you know, to kind of be another source of up-to-date information for you. So I wanted to start off by saying, you know, when I was using Windows, I was on Windows 7 and, you know, XP before that. I kept thinking, man, when I move over to OS X, because I had used Macs back in college, right, in the late 90s. And I kept thinking, when I move over to OS X, it's just going to be like all unicorns and rainbows and just amazing. But what I found is that two are quite comparable. Like, there are obviously big differences, but they each have their pluses and minuses. I have not felt like OS X is some magic silver bullet that is like way, way better than Windows. I think it has its own flaws. Have you found the same thing?
Oh, definitely. And that's why I run them both side by side, because there's certain things that I like how OS X handles them a lot better. And then there's other things where I like how Windows handles them better.
Right. I consider myself Mac first. Like, when I moved from Windows to Mac, I wanted to be on OS X most of the time and only move into Windows emulation when I needed to. And so that's really because I still have some legacy .NET code that I have to tool around in, and I have some sometimes classic ASP, obviously, for Hittail, and you can't do those on a Mac. So I replaced all my apps in the Mac world. I got the Skype Mac, and I got an FTP program, and I got a bunch of other stuff, and spent several hundred bucks to start with to kind of get that up to speed. But since then, everything's worked out. But I think you're Windows first. Is that right? Like, when you boot up, you have most of your productivity and stuff in the Windows emulator?
For me, it depends a little bit. If I'm using my desktop because it's a custom-built machine, obviously that's just Windows. So there's not even the option for OS X. On my laptop, I've got a MacBook Pro. And for that, I run Windows on top of VMware Fusion. And I don't have Windows startup unless I need it. So the majority of the time, I'll be doing most of my stuff inside of OS X. There will be times where it's like, if I need to fire up Visual Studio, obviously I'll just go over to Windows. I don't use Unity or anything like that. I have basically just 3-finger swipe, and then I'm in Windows and just use it directly all inside of one window. There's not a lot that I do over on the Windows side other than, you know, using Visual Studio. There's not much else. I mean, I will do some browsing, but I mean, I've got Skype on both Windows and on OS X. And then there's not a lot else, though, that where I really need it. It's just, if I'm doing software development, I'll use Windows. If I'm doing anything else, I'll use OS X. And that's only because all of my development stuff is in C#.NET.
Right. Yeah, and I'm in a similar boat. My .NET development is very, very limited now. It's really only bug fixes. I don't do really major features anymore, so it's probably less frequent than you. But I'm the same way. I bought VMware Fusion. We'll talk a little bit about that later. There's a bunch of different ways to kind of have Windows in a VM on Mac hardware. That's the best way that I found after doing a bunch of research and per your recommendation. So I think let's maybe talk a little bit about some drawbacks of moving, and then we'll talk about the benefits. And I think I actually have more benefits than drawbacks here. But the first drawback, and this was one of the reasons that I wasn't going to do it, was because you have to rebuy a lot of software. There's some stuff that's just not free, right? Like Camtasia Studio, and if you want Snagit or something like that, you kind of need to rebuy a Mac version, because once you have the Windows version, you know, it doesn't port over. And there's probably several other apps that are like that. We'll get into them a little later.
I think one of the bigger things for me, especially early on, was just the learning curve of understanding what some of the different buttons did in OS X and realizing that just fundamentally the way that they work is different than in Windows.
You know, for me, that was a big mental issue. Like, I didn't want to switch because I didn't want it to hammer my productivity. And I found that I switched pretty quickly. It was less than a week of disruption. I mean, within a day or two, I was moving at like 80, 90% speed. And then within a week, I was really not noticing the difference anymore. Having, you know, been on Windows now for, what, 13 years before then, having your shortcuts, your Control C instead of Command C, I thought it would be a big issue for me, but turns out it wasn't. I was able to relearn it pretty quickly.
Yeah, see, I didn't have as many problems with things like that. Like, you know, when I'm in OS X, I just know that it's Command C, and if I'm in Windows, it's Control C. For me, the bigger issue was that, like, certain keys, you know, like all along the top, OS X has all the function keys that if you hit those, typically, like, you'll change the sound volume or you'll increase or decrease the brightness. When I'm in Windows, when I'm doing software development, I need to be able to use those function keys when I'm, you know, in Visual Studio. So I actually remapped all of those so that in OS X, I actually have to hold down the function key in order to increase or decrease the sound and things like that. So it's slightly switched, but it just worked out that well for me.
Got it. Yeah, and I hold down the function key when I'm in Windows to do the same thing, since I'm in Windows less. But those function keys have gotten in the way when I'm trying to hit F5 to do a build or something, and I'm actually just lowering the brightness of my keyboard. I think the other thing that I've run into that was unexpected is my MacBook Air and a bunch of the other MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs of friends and family have wireless and or Bluetooth difficulties. Like, just here and there, they're intermittent, but like almost every time I flip my MacBook Air open, it takes 30 seconds to a minute to connect to wireless, and often I'll have to turn it off and turn it back on. And I was thinking, boy, I must have a defective MacBook, but a lot of folks have told me they run into the same thing. So this was unexpected. I didn't think about that, but I do think that it's something to be aware of. Have you run into any issues like that?
Yeah, mostly around the wireless stuff. It's irritating. It's not that it doesn't work. It's just there's times where you just expect it to just function right out of the box and just do what it's supposed to do, and it just doesn't.
Right.
One thing I found that seems like it had helped with that is I bought one of Apple's Time Machines with the built-in wireless N router and, you know, 2 or 3 terabyte hard drive or something like that, and that seems to be flawless. I don't ever have problems with that. Whenever I'm at home, it's never an issue. When I'm out on the road and, you know, trying to connect to, like, Wi-Fi at hotels, right, or customers and stuff like that, then it seems like it's more of an issue. But whenever you get into, like, enterprise Wi-Fi, I don't know why, for some reason they always have these weird quirks, and they don't necessarily work very well when it comes to Macs.
Right. Yeah, I only work from home one day a week anymore because we have an office, and then I often work from the apartment at the beach on Fridays. And so if I bought an Apple router, it wouldn't help me that much, you know, because I'm connecting to other people's Wi-Fi so often. So, but the Bluetooth thing for me too is, you know, I have a wireless keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse at both my home and work, because I prop the monitor up so that it's good ergonomics, right? And so I have the wireless stuff, and that's where the Bluetooth has been funky. It works most of the time. You know, it's reliable, but it will cut out now and again, just in the middle of me doing something, and I'll just have to put my hand up on the laptop until it stops. And it'll only cut out for like 20 seconds, but it might happen like once a day, and each thing disconnects. And it's just kind of like, not the end of the world, but it is an odd kind of side effect.
I'm surprised that happens, because I have a Bluetooth keyboard for my iPad, and I don't have any issues with that. Like, just starting up, it takes a few seconds to sync, but it never has an issue.
Yep,
so I'm surprised that you have that issue.
Yeah,
I'm surprised you have the issue on the laptop. And
I think the next drawback is potentially expense, right? It's like you can get a decent Dell laptop for $400 or $500. That's what my last Dell cost me, and it was solid. It moved fast, and it had a nice screen, and it had all that stuff. And, you know, obviously getting a MacBook or a MacBook Air is going to be 2, 3, 4 times that. So now, on the flip side, the Macs and the MacBooks, they really retain their value. Like, if when you're done with them, the resale value is very high.
I think you have to seriously qualify decent Dell.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the issue is that when you're buying, like, I went with a high-end MacBook. So with that, I mean, I got like a 512 gig SSD drive and 16 gigs of RAM. So to get something similar on the Dell side, I guess, you're not looking at $500. You're looking at easily $1,200 to $1,500, if not more. And that's if you don't just buy something low-end and then rip some of the components out and then replace them with your own.
Right. I think the next drawback potentially is I found the windowing, like the window management and the maximizing and moving windows around in general, it's gotten better with the newest OS X Mavericks, but frankly, I find it to be not as good as Windows.
Yeah, I think out of the box, it's not as good, but there's a lot of third-party apps that you can use. You know, there's definitely ways around that.
Right. And the last drawback I have listed is that if you are a Windows or .NET developer, obviously you are going to need a VM, a virtual machine of some kind, in order to run Windows and do the development. That's not a major drawback. It's actually less painful than I thought it would be. And like you said, if you just have it in a separate desktop and you do a three-finger swipe into it, it's pretty seamless. Aside from the keyboard shortcut switch and needing to hold down the function, like it's barely noticeable. Now let's dive into the benefits. The first thing that got me was the hardware is amazing. It's gorgeous. It's an aluminum body. The keyboard just feels like a dream. It has backlighting. It's just perfect. Like, it's such a well-constructed product. The trackpad is the best I've ever used, hands down. The keyboard is probably the best I've ever used, hands down. The screen is probably the best screen on a laptop I've ever used. So, I mean, it is top-notch. And I could not find, for any price, I could not find a comparable Windows laptop. This is about 14, 15 months ago. I was looking for the same type of thing, aluminum, really good keyboard, really good trackpad. And as far as I know, it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think for me, the look of it wasn't so much a big deal for me. So, like, I didn't really care that it had an aluminum body. But, like, for me, it was, like, the hardware specs. The keyboard took a little getting used to. So I wasn't necessarily used to, like, the little chiclet keys and things like that. And then for the trackpad, I have to agree with you totally on that one. I mean, the trackpad on the MacBook Pro, it's awesome. It's better than any other trackpad I've ever seen on any other laptop. And then, of course, as you said, the screen. You can't find a screen that is as good as, you know, what Apple ships with theirs.
The next benefit I have is the gestures and the clickability of the trackpad. They make it completely usable. I am almost as effective and as productive just using the trackpad as I am with a full mouse and keyboard setup. And I've never even come close to that with any type of Windows setup. And it's purely because there are so many gestures you can do with the two-finger scrolling, the three-finger swipes back and forth between desktops. Even with a single monitor at a coffee shop, I can do things that would typically take me multi-monitors at home because you can swipe back and forth so quickly to compare things.
Yeah, I found the same exact thing. I mean, just the multi-finger gestures is really what makes that even possible. Because, and I'll find myself when I'm using other people's laptops, I'll find myself trying to use like two-finger scroll and things like that. And it just doesn't work in Windows. And it's not that you would expect it to, but on my MacBook, because I have things over on Windows and running through VMware, the two-finger scroll does work in Windows. So it's disappointing to go to somebody else's laptop that trackpad just doesn't support it because, you know, they don't expect you to be using multi-finger gestures.
Yeah, my son uses my old Dell, and whenever I get on it to help him out, it is painful to hit a web page and then have to just trackpad over to the scroll bar on the right and drag it down to move anything. It just feels incredibly inefficient. The next benefit I have is that I don't feel like I need to download a Windows update every week, right? There are some OS updates that come through, but it's not all the time. And I always felt like with Windows, every time I was booting up, there was like a Java update, an Adobe update, all the stuff that I was downloading all the time. And they were huge updates and they took forever and the computer would reboot and all that stuff. And the updates on the Mac are just, they're fewer and far between. They seem to download really quickly. And every once in a while, one will require a reboot. But even that, when it reboots, it brings everything almost back to where it was before it rebooted. Like, I've been kind of impressed with that it doesn't impact my productivity as much as rebooting a Windows machine where you just come back to the bare desktop and all your windows are closed.
I think the two things that you said there are Adobe updates and Java updates. I mean, I think that's the killer. I don't think it matters what operating system you're actually on. But in terms of Windows updates, I mean, the other thing I'll point out is I almost never reboot my virtual machine on my MacBook. Like, I'll do the Windows updates, you know, when they come out, but I don't tend to restart that machine. What I'll do is I'll just suspend it, and then I just close my MacBook, and that's the end of it. And it's like, I don't even have to restart the machine most of the time.
Another benefit is that you don't need to run virus scanning software or antivirus because there just aren't that many viruses for OS X. I don't know that that's a huge benefit for me. I think it's probably a bigger benefit for, you know, someone who's less technical because I always just ran antivirus and was careful what I clicked on. But I think it could be, you know, a benefit, especially for like family members as they've asked me what computer they should get. I'm a little more willing to recommend a Mac, even though it's more expensive, that I think it could potentially be safer for, you know, maybe someone like my mom.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see this as a huge benefit either. I guess it's nice to know that you're probably not going to get one, but I don't know as not running antivirus software at all is really going to make that any better.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, the last two benefits that I see, these I didn't know in advance, but like OS X has some pretty cool stuff built into it that I had to get add-ons in Windows to get. And it's like, you know, if you hit Command Space in OS X, you get the Spotlight search, and you can search everything on your computer, not only documents, but you can search programs and everything. And so I don't have many programs, actual apps, like in my bottom bar to quick launch. I just hit Command Space, start typing the name, and hit Enter, and it brings it up. And I had an add-on called, I think it was Simple Run or something like that, that I used on Windows. But then every time that I reinstalled Windows, which I did every 2 years, I'd have to reinstall that and configure it. And I had a special config file I had to move, and it was just a kind of a pain. And so to have this working is a really nice hack for me. And then the other thing is the preview in OS X works really well. Like if you open a PDF doc in there, I don't even download Adobe Acrobat because preview works so well. And you can even manipulate Adobe Acrobat documents, PDFs, that you can, like, if you have two, you can merge them together. You can swipe pages between them. You can delete pages out of a PDF. You can add pages to it. I mean, it's pretty darn powerful. Just the simple, you know, what I thought was a pretty simple preview app built into OS X is actually, you know, more powerful than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I don't find that in Windows that finding the apps is really all that much of a challenge because, you know, you just hit the Windows button and then, you know, start typing and you can do the exact same thing that you're doing over in OS X with the Command Space. It's identical. It works the exact same way. The one thing I have noticed that you haven't mentioned is that backups on OS X, if you're using Time Machine and you have a Time Machine device on your network, it's just almost flawless. And I actually ran into an issue with one of my earlier MacBooks. I had a MacBook Air, and it looked like things were going a little flaky with it. So I took it back to the Apple store, and they took a look at it and said, oh, yeah, we think your video card's fried. And I'm like, great. You know, now I've got to move everything over and all this stuff. And they just said, okay, we'll just swap it out. And they just plugged a Thunderbolt cable into a new MacBook, and then they plugged it into mine, and they ran this program, and they just moved everything over, had all my programs, all my settings, all my data, everything. And I didn't have to worry about it at all. And just in looking back at Time Machine's very similar. Obviously, it'll be a little bit slower, but I would say functionally equivalent.
Yeah, that's really nice. I mean, and that's what you get with, you know, you get iCloud backup on your phone, your iPhone or your iPad. And it's amazing. I had problems with an iPhone and I brought it in and they nuked it, gave me a new one, and everything was back pretty much the way I'd had it. And I was really impressed with that. So I didn't know Time Machine could do it to that extent, but I will likely be looking at getting one because I obviously I have CrashPlan and Dropbox and stuff. So I'm backing everything up, but it would still take me all the time to reinstall the apps, right? And if Time Machine can handle that for me and actually does more of like an image, that'll save me a lot of time and it will definitely be worth it. I think the last benefit that I was looking for is there's, you know, with Windows, you get this cruft and it's either the registry or there's just something about it. When you install and uninstall apps, they leave stuff and the OS slows down over time. If you have a Windows installation that's 5 or 10 years old, it gets really, really slow and you have to repave it. On my laptop, I would reinstall Windows every 18 to 24 months. From what I've heard, from what I've seen, OS X just does not have this same issue. So I'm not there yet, right? I'm only 15 months in, but I'm looking forward to having this install of the OS around for quite some time.
Yeah, I think part of that is on the Windows side, at least, is just, you know, most people don't defragment their registry. And the registry just, it's kind of like a database where the file itself gets locked on disk and it grows over time and shrinks and there's stuff being inserted into it and it doesn't have a really good way of defragmenting it. So I'm sure that, you know, somebody will write into us and say that I'm totally butchering the explanation. But I have seen that where if you just defrag the registry, it can, you know, seriously speed up your machine, especially on older ones. But then again, I mean, if you're going over to an SSD, I mean, a lot of those problems just go away anyway.
So now we're going to take a look at a couple things. One is software, and they also have a little bit of hardware, and it's basically stuff that we either had to buy to make the transition or stuff that was free and we were able to just easily replace. And so the first section here is like stuff that was free. So on my Windows machine, I used certain apps like Chrome, Skype, remote desktop to get into, you know, Windows servers remotely. All that stuff is available for OS X. So Chrome, and it works almost identically. Skype, the UI was all different, but I got used to it pretty quick. And then Windows Remote Desktop's there. CrashPlan, which is what I use for backups, that had a client for both of them. Dropbox and Audacity, which I use for audio editing. So all of those apps were easy, free downloads, and I was able to just seamlessly replace them.
Well, there's one thing that you mentioned in there that I don't think a lot of people know is that you can get a remote desktop for Windows client on the Mac. Like, they, most people don't realize that there is a Mac version of that that allows you to connect to Windows machines. So if you have like a Windows server out there, you can just RDP into it directly from OS X.
Right.
I think other than that, I also installed Evernote. I have Evernote, Dropbox, and SugarSync on both my Windows and on my OS X machines. And I use that to sync back and forth between my desktop, my virtual machine, and my OS X machine. Other than that, I also have Microsoft Office installed, which you get it through MSDN, but if you have an MSDN subscription, it comes free with that, whereas the Mac version of Office did not used to come with that.
Right. That makes sense. I do have Office as well. Purely because Word and Excel, the UIs I find is better than Pages and Numbers. I do use Keynote, though, now instead of PowerPoint. And like you, I get the Office suite for free with MSDN. Now let's talk a little bit about stuff we bought. The two hardware things that I bought when I moved over to OS X was, one, I bought a smart mouse, which is like $70 or $80, but it allows you to have the gestures, because you get so spoiled by the trackpad, being able to flip between desktops and do all kinds of scrolling and stuff, that a normal mouse would almost feel like subpar to the trackpad. And so instead of trying to get like a Bluetooth trackpad, you don't quite have as much subtle control. I got the smart mouse, and to me, it's like the best of both worlds. I get the gestures, but I also get the fine grained control of a mouse. Do you use a smart mouse or an external mouse, or do you only use a trackpad?
I use a external USB mouse. It's got like a little USB dongle that I just plug into it, but it's a Microsoft Arc mouse.
So you use a Microsoft mouse with your OS X laptop.
Yes.
Perfect.
I tried using one of the external trackpads, though, but I didn't feel like it worked as well as the one that's built into the laptop.
The other thing I bought was I upgraded my external monitors, because the display of the MacBook is so nice that I couldn't use these old crappy, you know, four-year-old Dell monitors that I had. So I upgraded to like the brand new Dell IPS monitor, which is quite similar. It's not exactly the same as the Apple Cinema display, but it's about as close as you can get to it and not pay an exorbitant amount. So at both home and the office, I upgraded that. And using the Thunderbolt cable, it gives you just the best quality external monitor experience I've ever had.
Yeah, I don't really use an external monitor for my MacBook, working off of my desktop anyway.
The rest of this is really software, and this is stuff that I had to buy in the transition. One was VMware Fusion that we talked about earlier, which is just the, you know, the Windows emulator. And that's the one that I researched this a lot, and I took your recommendation, but also went out and read all the articles. And there's these different pluses and minuses between Parallels and VMware Fusion, and then there's an open source free version of this. As I got to it, VMware Fusion was, I think, the right choice, and I have had no qualms or issues about it.
I stand by my decision to use VMware Fusion as well. And it's not that I think any less of, you know, like Parallels or anything like that. I know people who've used Parallels, but I just haven't really had any problems with VMware. So it's worked out well for me. Plus, I use VMware on Windows as well. So it's just familiar to me.
Natural fit, for sure. The other software I bought was FlexiGlass, and it's just a little utility you can get in the Mac App Store. It kind of emulates some of the Windows windowing stuff. So you can, when you actually close a window with a right click now in OS X, if you're running FlexiGlass, it actually closes the entire program so that you don't close these windows out and then have all these programs running in the background, which I think to me is like a drawback of OS X, that everything stays running. Whereas in Windows, you know, if you click the X, the program actually shuts down. And so FlexiGlass does that and a few other kind of advanced windowing features that I think Windows beats OS X on. But FlexiGlass does a pretty good job of emulating that. And I actually bought that based on your recommendation.
I still love FlexiGlass. One of the other things that it allows you to do is it allows you to just use keys to snap windows around on the screen, so you can make them use, you know, the right half or left half of the screens and things like that. And it just makes the experience a little bit nicer and slightly more Windows-like, especially just in terms of being able to lock those windows onto one half of the screen or the other, or, you know, center them or go full screen and things like that. It just gives you the shortcuts, keyboard shortcuts, to make that stuff easier to do.
Another app I bought was Total Finder, and that's from Micropreneur Academy's own Antonin Hildebrand. Total Finder is cool. Now, since then, like, I think Mavericks introduced tabbed Finder windows, and Total Finder has had that for years, but Total Finder still has some other advantages. It has keyboard shortcuts. Like, I hit Option E to open my Finder window, and I use that constantly. I mean, just constantly doing it, kind of like I used to use, I guess it was Windows E to open Explorer. It's basically the same thing. So I know they're competitors, and I know that, you know, Mavericks has played a little bit of catch up with it, but I would still recommend checking out Total Finder. It's dirt cheap for all the value I get out of it.
Yeah, I use Total Finder as well. The other one I use is a program called Text Wrangler. And Text Wrangler is, it's probably a little bit different than Ultra Edit, but it gives you the ability to, you know, just write text documents and search them easily. And I almost use it in some ways as kind of like a glorified Notepad++ application.
Yeah, that's what I use Ultra Edit for. So I've used Ultra Edit since 1999 or 2000 on Windows. It is better on Windows because they built it there first, but they have an OS X version, and it aside from a few bugs here and there, it's pretty comparable. And so since I know all the shortcuts and the ins and outs of it, I got a copy of Ultra Edit. And then Sublime Text is the other one. I mean, that's kind of a famed Ruby text editor. I know programmers in other languages use that as well. So I have both Ultra Edit and Sublime Text for my text editing. And like you said, I use Ultra Edit. It's kind of just a little notepad thing that's always there, and that's where I'm keeping a lot of notes. And then when I move them into permanent places, they'll go into Google Docs or in, you know, presentations or such. Another thing that I bought was FTP software. I learned that Transmit, which you can get, I think it's $20 in the Mac App Store, is just works great. You can edit files on the server, do some basic stuff like that. Now, Ultra Edit has it like advanced file editing on the server capabilities. So if I'm going to do a lot of stuff, I'll use Ultra Edit because it has all the syntax highlighting. But Transmit is perfectly adequate. I wouldn't seek out a free version, I'll put it that way, just because like for the $20 one time, you get the updates and you know the program's going to be around.
Yeah, I don't even think I bothered installing anything on OS X for that. I just do those things over on the Windows side.
How about for image editing? I used to use paint.net in Windows, which is an open source app that is like a simplified version of Photoshop, which is perfect, right? I don't need all the features of Photoshop, and I don't do enough image editing that I want to pay for something. And so I looked around for quite a while, and I found Pixmator, and I love it. And I don't remember how much it was, $30-$40. It wasn't very much. It was in the App Store. And I use it probably every day or two, you know, just to edit a photo or to kind of mock up a screen cap, mark something up. I mean, it's pretty powerful. Do you do any image editing in OS X, or do you do it all in Windows?
I don't do it at all. I just hand it off to somebody else to do.
Nice. Yeah, I take probably 5 or 10 screenshots a day and send them to people, and I often like to call things out. And that's typically what I use this for.
Oh, okay. On OS X, I use Snaps Pro.
Got it.
Because most of the stuff that, if I'm doing that, usually I'm on the Windows side, and I use Snagit. And Snagit has the built-in capabilities for annotating images as you take the screenshots.
Yeah, I have Snagit too. I bought it for OS X, and I don't use it because I use the built-in stuff from the Mac, just because it's keyboard shortcut. It's so simple. You know, what is it, like Command-Shift-4, I think. So that's what I use. I should probably use Snagit since I bought it. Just a couple more that I bought. I had to buy Camtasia Studio because I do a lot of screencasting for both the VAs and other purposes. And I, you know, had it on Windows, and I had to rebuy it in the OS X App Store. And that was, I think it was $300 on Windows. And I think the App Store version is like $99. But I think you can get a more full OS X version for like $300. And it's actually better. So I don't really know the ins and outs since I don't do a ton of editing anymore. If I record and I need to edit, I typically send it to someone else to do the edits. So there's certainly some ins and outs. But to only pay $99 for it was pretty cool. And now I can do native screencasts. Because for the first few weeks, I was like flipping over into VMware Fusion, into Windows every time I wanted to record a screencast. And that was just a little bit of a pain because the like your USB stuff, the headset wasn't connected. And I'd have to disconnect and reconnect and stuff. But do you record screencasts ever in OS X, or you do it all in Windows?
No, I do it all in Windows. If I'm doing a screencast, it's usually I'm doing stuff inside of Audit Shark, either the desktop edition or the web edition, but typically in the desktop edition, and I need it to run on Windows anyway.
Got it. Last couple things that I bought when I moved to OS X are I bought Call Recorder to record Skype calls, primarily for this podcast, frankly, and I had used Pamela in the Windows side. And then I actually moved away from iTunes. I've heard iTunes works better once you're on OS X, because it sure didn't work very well in Windows. I'm purely in the Amazon world now, the ecosystem. So for all my music, it's up in the cloud player. iTunes Match did not work for me. It would not license a bunch of my files, and pretty often I would not be able to play my music from multiple devices, which was just amazing to me. Even on Apple hardware, it wasn't doing it. So eventually I just moved all the way to Amazon, and it's been really nice. I have not missed iTunes one bit, and I do my audiobooks now through the Audible app on my phone. I do my podcast through the podcast app on my phone, and then all my music's in the Amazon Cloud Player, and it has clients. It has a desktop client for Mac, Windows, and I think Linux, and it has a web client, and then it has all the mobile OSs you would need. So that I think that about wraps up what, you know, things that I purchased when I transitioned over. Do you have any others that I left off the list?
like I said, I mean, I'm probably more slanted towards the Windows side, and I use the stuff on OS X primarily to, I'll say, do offline thinking when I'm not directly working on the product, when I'm working on marketing stuff or, you know, trying to creatively think about solutions to marketing problems and things like that. But if I'm going into the technical side, I'll go into Windows. So I think that about wraps us up. If you're thinking about switching over from Windows to Mac, well, hopefully this episode will give you some things to think about. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, or by RSS at startupsforthestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.